Join Johannes, a necromancer of some little infamy, and his charismatic brother Horst in the many adventures of the Cabal Brothers on the Necromancer's Deathcast. From circuses to dreamlands in turn-of-the-century Never Never England, author Jonathan L. Howard brings his dry wit and exceptionally clever writing to this series of the most intense and tumultuous proportions. Rise up, all ye undead, and rejoice in the wonder that is the Necromancer's Deathcast.
Welcome to the Necromancer's Deathcast, brought to you by Free Flow Rambling. This is episode 1.2, Stormfront, where we are discussing the second half of Johannes Cabal and the Blustery Day. My name is Tanzin, and I am joined by Amber.
Hey there.
And Jess.
Hey.
Johannes Cabal has faced down the undead, ghosts, monsters, and Satan himself. But before all that, he fought the terrifying Bonewind, a supernatural being that devours life itself. And he did it all without leaving his house. So we're continuing where we left off?
Right. So basically we found out that Johannes got cursed. And that's now right. He's not very happy about it.
The dreaded bone wind.
The dreaded bone wind is coming. Bada bing, bada boom, curse done.
Figures out that the skirting board people are a bunch of assholes.
It's basically like that. I'm walking here. You're cursed. Done.
Yeah, totally.
So very quick to action. He's like, all right, you curse me. I got a crowbar and rip up your home.
Totally.
Runs to the basement, grabs a crowbar, runs back to, like, I guess where he knows the skirting board people prefer to chill. Like, I feel like if they're anywhere in your baseboards, they could be anywhere, right? But he, like, I know the exact corner you motherfuckers crawl out of, like, rips it open. And, you know, he finds some nice doll furniture. He finds some papers.
Totally. And actually, in one of the quotes, it gets to why... In the book, it actually explains why they would curse him. And I find this hilarious. It was, they say, they were the work of some Lilliputian architect showing a sideways projection of the house. His house, with its front wall removed to show the addition of new floors within. Lots of new floors, each slightly taller than a skirting board. Which, okay, so basically these skirting board or baseboard people were essentially property developers looking for an opportunity to kick out the local, you know, the local resident, which, you know.
Truly evil.
We've seen it in real life. Happens all the time.
Yep.
But I just thought that was hilarious that here you got these little creatures living in you. It's almost like the old joke about if the cockroaches took over the world, like essentially that's kind of what they're already plotting is, you know, we're skirting board people and we're going to take this giant mansion of yours and make it a luxury condo. Thank you very much.
And he gets into it. He's like, you ungrateful bastards. I let you live in my home, which is... especially weird to me, because for me coming into this, it's like, I don't know what's up with your house. I don't know why the shit is the way it is. Did you bring the box? Was the box always here? So for me reading this book, I kind of thought like the skirting board people had always been here. But once I got to this line, it's like, oh no, you brought them in and allowed them to live here? This is a problem of your own making. Like, why the fuck would you do that? Like, I wouldn't open my house to every rat and mouse and be like, come on in, bitches. Like, I might be making a stew one of these days. Like, no. Like,
I got some tea on the counter for you.
Yeah, like, it's insane to me that he let them in. So I'm a little bit like, this is your own problem, dude. And I wonder, like, was it just out of the goodness of your own heart? Like, what was the point of bringing them in? Like, were they, like, mouse control for you? Like, were they doing tiny... architecture fix-ups for you? Like, why did you bring them in? What was the benefit for you originally anyways?
But see, I think that's a really interesting question in terms of the dichotomy of, like, the character of Cabal, where you're, like, he always sort of strikes me as independent, elusive, reclusive, right? Like, he's not someone who necessarily plays well with others. But yet he's got this cast of characters. Well,
he's and it living almost, in, like, Foster's imaginary day home. Like,
it reminds me almost of, like, Jim Henson's Muppets, where you've got all of these different critters in the sidelines
and for
doing various mischief, and like some are malicious and some are not, and like he's got fairy people and quote unquote not gnomes in his in his garden. He's got these, you know, baseboard skirting board people, and he's got this something in a box that's constantly singing. Like, he's surrounded by entities. He's surrounded by beings, but at the same time, he is so independent-minded in so many ways, right?
It's that's just, yeah, again, a big thing about it is, like for me, because of that understanding of him, I feel like he had to have been getting something out of it. And that's never breached in this short story. So it's like, why did you even bring them in the first place? Because without him explaining, like, I brought you here to blah as a favor to this and you do that, or something like that. Like, we don't have that conversation. So to that end, I have to assume that it was just out of the goodness of his own heart. Like, are they paying rent? Like, what was the purpose, right?
Overstepped their power, I really don't know.
And I'm so confused by it, but...
Well, and sometimes I think that these things kind of, like, they it doesn't make a lot of sense to begin with. Like, I think earlier...
Listen, skirting board people, I'm going to need a plot device at some point. Let's go. Move it.
But, like, in our earlier episode, we were talking about how, you know, he talks about there's these random things like Napoleon busts, or, like, the description of the setting is so detailed, and you go, like... Why? Like, is this just more sort of like landscape development, or is this for something? And it's interesting because later on in the story, he says, nothing would pass through the water or up the drain. This is when he's preparing his house against the impending bone wind. He says, nothing would pass through the water or up the drain while it hung there. Cabal had long since left the kitchen in the care of the trinket. Other defenses to emplace. So you actually start to see how some of these sort of quote-unquote random things around his house actually may have a deeper sort of magical or mystical rationale behind them, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, maybe it's the same with the characters, the additional characters in his world, like the skirting board people. Like, there's some reason for them being there, and it's not necessarily clear from the beginning. But there was rationale at some point, right? Like, maybe they protected him from something in the past, or maybe... And so, like, even when we're talking about sort of the plot development and the descriptors of his space, it seems random, but for Cabal, he knows why it's there.
At this point, it almost seems like JLH was, like, picking, like, two or three things out of a hat, and he's like, all right, how do I put these all into a story? Like, you know, like, it's like one of those, like, you know, game shows where it's like, turn this, this, and this into an amazing five-star meal, or, like... You know, and it's like, okay, like, I'm sure there's a reasoning behind it, but at the same time, like, he says, as you just brought up the pipes, like, it's not the first time that he's had to guard these pipes. Mm-hmm. So it's like, for whatever reason, he's already instilled this, what was it, a plant?
Trinket.
A trinket to guard the pipes, not for the first time. So it's like, what is happening in your house? Like, I don't know. Like, I get the whole, like, magical, mystical...
It was a pen.
Characters living in magical, mystical homes. And, you know, it's a common thing, you know, monster house or whatever, houses of magical varieties.
Harry Potter, TARDIS,
Dobby houses. They build their own sort of a personality, right? And I'm totally down with that. It very much fits the genre. It's fun. But at the same time, you know, angry, brooding wizard. Yeah, like, get out of my house. Anyways.
Well, and that I love the descriptor later on. He says, he tried to avoid deluding himself whenever possible and appreciated that he had, at best, a 50-50 chance of surviving until dark. Still, if he was going to be the victim of a bunch of double-dealing pocket-sized property developers, he wasn't going to go easily. Like, pocket-sized property developers actually made me laugh out loud.
Really? Yeah, like, me too. There's just so many funny moments in this book.
It's really good for one-liners.
Oh, 100%.
So anyway, so as we learn through his research, the bone wind will be dispelled by day sunrise or nightfall, which is a very common magical trope already. You know, the sunlight fucks all the shit up. I like that that's consistent in this world as well. So from this, we've decided that he's...
It shows up at midday.
At midday.
And then at nightfall.
Yes. One or the other. It cannot survive through both. So he, for whatever reason, says it'll come at midday. He doesn't really explain why. He just knows for a fact that it'll come at midday.
Yeah. It says the only thing he knew for certain was that it could not stay past sunrise or nightfall whenever it visited. If he could survive till the turn of the day, he would survive it all.
So he again, runs around his house preparing for this, as you said. He's blocking off every little cubby hole under doorway, windowsill, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There is no drafts into this building whatsoever.
Right.
Okay?
Sealed with papyrus and glyphs.
If it's small enough for wind to crack through it, he is fortifying it, right?
Totally.
Which is a hard thing to do. Like, I wouldn't be able to check my house that thoroughly. Like, like I don't know what corners are breach containment. I don't know. Like,
yeah.
I just, like, I'm trying to think, like, at some point, somewhere, somehow, there has to be damage at some point that you can't see from your side of the walls, right? Like, but anyways, he runs around, does this shit, prepares his house.
The house had to stand firm if he were to stand a chance.
I found was really funny is not only does he fortify the house, but he sabotages it just in case that he dies. The skirting board people do not actually get
also go down with him
because he sabotaged the boiler to blow up.
Yeah.
Oh, I missed that. Jeez, yeah. I didn't even see that. Yeah. Okay, that's cool. Absolutely. Well, if I can't have it, nobody can. I like that.
Yeah.
That works. So we see the bone wind slowly come in as the clock strikes the last stroke of 12. Melodramatic and tardy, he called out. What a dismal combination. Again, making me laugh out loud.
Boom, crash, bang, bone wind comes with a vengeance and can't get in.
He's not happy.
Not happy at all.
And wherever it tried to get in, he had to be there to face it. So that also speaks to what you were saying with the ever vigilant, you know,
yes.
And know your space.
Well, yeah, so you know, Bone Wind is running window to window, door ledge, looking for any failure in the property, right? And Cabal is keeping track with it, going around the house with the Bone Wind, you know, like, neener, neener, neener.
I love that he mocks the Bone Wind any chance he gets. He taunts it. And the fake out. Oh, that's my favorite part.
Right.
Ach, du lieber Gott, he cried in a terrible voice. The coal hole. Are you looking for the coal hole that doesn't exist?
And it says, like, after, like, 15 minutes. That's a long time for an omnipresent wind spirit to circle a house.
That's like, a lot of work.
That's a lot of work. And, like, like, a long time, too. Like, this all-encompassing wind, I feel, should be able to wrap around a house 100 times in a minute. Like, you know, like, to have wasted the time by 15 minutes, and he just sits himself down in the attic and stares up at the skylight and waits for this bone wind to...
Lights a cigar and chills out.
Yeah, like, all right. So...
Bring it. Yeah, he started puffing smoke rings at it. So, again, back to that taunting that you were talking about. Like, go ahead, do your worst. And, like, that confidence, like, that, I think for me, that's kind of what keeps pulling me back to the Cabal series. It's just, it's this
26-year-old bitch.
But it's this irreverent confidence, you know, like, sure, he's scared. Sure, there's this worry at the back of his mind. But at the same time, he knows that whatever, do your worst. I can handle it.
Well, we'll get into it in the next book, but I found that one to even be more of the neener neener sort of thing. And I'm just like, shut up. Like, anyways, so time passes with them basically just in a stare off. Like, he's done his job and he's done it well. Like, the bone went straight up, cannot get in, and is furious, but tough luck. And then, you know, he has this moment where he's like getting hungry, thirsty. I could make tea. I could do something.
Oh, the moment where he refers to his subconscious, which he refers to almost as a third party dialogue with himself. Like, that's just wonderful.
Yes.
And like a near annoying third party. Like, he's almost at war with his subconscious. Like, what the fuck are you bothering me about now? Like,
well, and it's his subconscious was trying to tell him something, but being a subconscious couldn't just go ahead and tell him. Oh, no, it had to get all signs and symbols with him. That was hilarious. Like, who's subconscious? Like, wouldn't it be nice if your subconscious actually just was really clear and said, like, okay, don't go down that path?
Yeah,
or,
right.
Like, you know, maybe you should chill out today as opposed to, you know, taking on whatever, whatever. A giant scary wind.
I just had the other day, like, someone offered me a beer, and I normally never turn down alcohol in my life, but for whatever reason, I did. And I was like, I'll just have water, no problem. Then went through my first ever check stop, and I was like, motherfucker, why did I just drink water? And then yesterday somebody offered me a beer again, and I was like, and I took it, thinking of this moment. I was like, if I get a truck stop now, like, my subconscious will beat me over the fucking face. And of course, everything was fine, but I was like, why? I don't know. Like, why am I thinking about this story right now? Does that mean don't drink? Does that mean drink? Am I just being crazy? Totally. I'm gonna drink, but yeah, if your subconscious was more just like, drink, don't drink, it'd be a done deal.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Well, it's funny because he's even pragmatic with his own subconscious. It's like, I need a clearer idea of why my life depends on a Swiss roll and tea.
Yeah.
Like, he's having, as you say, this conversation with his subconscious. If I'd wanted tea, it would have been over an hour ago at 3. So, like, he's, I mean, there you get the whole sort of British background or the European background of tea at 3, but... You know, it's sort of like, why subconscious would you be telling me I need a snack?
And also more to the point that he's so anal. I don't think most British people are like, oh, I missed it at 3, can't have tea until tomorrow.
Totally. And then we get the return of the Napoleon bust.
Yeah.
In terms of the defense.
Well, the return of the 417 reference,
yes,
too.
Well, absolutely. Yes. So
it comes, here's our first circle reference.
Comes full circle, yeah.
Yes.
17 minutes past. Ach, scheiße. Sorry, we should probably bleep that out. It's okay, Jess wears more than I do.
And we'll continue to.
Have we mentioned we're potty mouths?
I thought that was well established. I'm sorry. I didn't realize that we were going to be trying to hold back.
I'm teasing.
Yeah, so anyways, whatever, finally boils down that his subconscious was trying to tell him that the time does matter, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, 417 comes again.
And so do the skirting board people.
Which scurry on the impact of the Napoleon bus tossed in.
Yeah, so he makes a grab for it.
Direction.
Runs
four
at
left.
Them. Yeah. But the damn little bastards have managed to peel back the tape.
From the door.
True.
And that's all the bone wind needed.
That's right.
The mail
into the letterbox. Yeah. Yes.
The bone wind is in the house.
And he's got backup. He's got backup weapons.
Yeah, he's got his satchel with him. He throws a spell into it that allows the bone wind to be visible. And my favorite, it's just this dramatic moment, and his retort is, seen worse. Such a great punchline to a dramatic lead up.
Yeah. All right. It's okay. Not impressed.
I am the terrifying bone. Why does nobody ever like my face? I've been working on this look for so long.
Meanwhile, meh.
Yeah. So, as you said, he's got more tricks up his sleeve. Such being the literal blood in his veins. He's a necromancer, though. He does magic signs, blah, blah, blah. And experiment 473 is a go.
Well, I like that little moment right before the bone wind tries to come at him through the door there, is that he gets confused by a rogue animated skeleton instead of Cabal, because it was so overly excited to get at him that it overshot.
Yes. Overshot and ended up with a skeleton who just sits up in bed and waves.
I love that Jonathan L. Howard gives the bone wind quite a personality already. Like it gets confused at the skeleton. It also gets childish and wrecks all the shrubbery, the herb garden outside.
Yes.
It just throws tantrums. It listens to what he has to say and gets quite upset.
Well, and you got to appreciate that, because it's like you take a look at a lot of sort of the villains, right? And they, in popular culture, villains tend to be two-dimensional at most, mm-hmm. right? It's sort of like, okay, they're bad. Why are they bad? I don't know, because...
Can wind be two-dimensional?
Deep. I don't know. But personality-wise... But it's like there seems to be like only a few settings for the bad guys,
yes.
right? It's like either anger or reticence, you know? And so it's like, I find that even the bad guys, quote-unquote, in Jonathan L. Howard's books... They have personality. Like, they got humor. They got character. It's not just, I am bad, I will kill you, in worse Skeletor voice.
I think it's fair to say, too, though, that a lot of villains are able to, like, go home to their wife and kids and have a conversation with them. You know, they can save their one-liners. for the movies, right? But like the bone wind, who does he have to talk to in his off time, right? Oh. Like I imagine a lot of his victims are not aware that he can have a conversation. So I'm sure this is also very nice and cathartic for him too. Like,
oh,
I'm
going to kill you. Being a villain can be such a lonely life.
It's so sad. They don't tell you that in villain school.
Well, and I often wonder, because like, especially as I get older, I realize that not everyone, yeah, see, this, listen to my words of wisdom, youngsters. I find that like, there's no such thing as bad guys, right? Like, there are people who have very, very different opinions from you. And there are people who have very, very different approaches than you. And it doesn't necessarily make them bad or evil. It's just, they're not you. It's us.
As a young person,
them.
I'm rolling my eyes.
Are you?
Yes.
Okay, fantastic. But do you know what I'm saying? It's like, there is no such thing as bad guys. So to have them be a little more dimensional than just, okay, they're angry or they've lost. You know, just...
Yeah.
That's character development. I like it. I like it. Okay, I'll stop being an old geezer now. Shut up.
No. Allow me just to stare at you.
I haven't even hit 50 yet. Leave me alone.
I'm 24. I don't know what 50 is.
You'll get there one day.
No.
That's right.
And then you'll look back and go, well, that didn't take long.
That's right. And then you'll find yourself saying things like, you know, when I was young.
Okay. Sad people. I'm going to die at 30.
So.
Yeah. So Cabal does make it to his laboratory. As he said, he manages to use blood to make a binding spell to shut the door. And then.
For a small time.
Yeah. It works for a brief,
moment.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And enough to concoct experiment 473. Again, coming full circle with the for very beginning of the story. I love that he has this cyclical
There's
writing.
There's a parallelism, definitely.
Hmm.
Yeah, like it says experiment 473 was a success, the best sort of success. The sort of success that comes in compact little bundle and flings itself straight at an eldritch weather condition. Like that, as you're saying, it's a complete parallel to the start, which was 472 was a failure. An epic failure. So, yeah.
It's beautifully written that way.
Mm.
I love it. Love it, love it, love it.
Well, and it's that nice little package wrap-up that, you know, even... The author himself has said that he strives for in every small story or every short story is that, like, how do you wrap it all up in a nice little package? So it's a nice cycle.
Right.
I just want to throw in this moment of confidence from him as well, is that when the bone wind does finally get into the room, he essentially, you know, powders the door. And Cabal has this moment of being like, oh, I hate hanging doors. Like, you'll be dead in a minute. You don't have to hang a door. Like, you're going to be dead and your house is going to explode. He's like, oh, I hate hanging doors. Like,
somebody's going to pay for that.
So overconfident about the work he's going to have to do in later. It's like, you'll be dead.
He's not thinking about the fight, but like, oh, having to clean up all crap
this
after
mess,
the fight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who left all this crap on the floor?
Right. Worst part about a house invasion is cleaning up after it, for sure. Yeah.
Sounds like the last party I had, actually. Also equally challenging to get the guests out the door after a few drinks. Funny
I'm
how
tired, get out.
So relatable. Yeah. And it says... And the bone wind retreated slowly out of the laboratory, apparently regarding the vessel Cabal bore before him as a vampire regards a cross, or almost everybody regards a Jehovah's Witness. Ouch.
I bellowed inappropriately when I read that statement, like so hard.
But essentially, once again, we see Cabal sort of bluffing his way, or like this, using his overconfidence, really, or the confidence he has to sort of, get the hell out of my house.
He's a performer.
100%.
Yeah.
And he does, I mean, really, the bone wind wastes his odds. That first hit was nasty.
Totally.
And he's afraid of a second one. So, you know, Cabal basically breaks the curse. Like, this is not how it's supposed to end. You get consumed and that's that. And he's basically managed to scare the bone wind into, like, no.
Submission.
Yeah, like...
Well, and to top it all off,
he just
kind of throws a bit of blood onto the letterbox and says, fuck right off. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Night falls and Johannes is officially safe again.
Yas. No time to rest, though.
Well, he fixes up his boiler. House doesn't need to explode anymore. That's nice. Gets on his bike, rides into town.
It's a wonderful conclusion. Like, this ending, again, the coming parallelism, coming full circle. The next scene, because after he comes back from town, we don't really find out what happens. But then what we see is Cabell going to bed and waiting.
And the brutality of the karmic revenge.
Next, you hear the snap, snap, snapping of all the traps laid out for the skirting board people.
Mouse traps everywhere.
Shows them right, such little assholes.
I absolutely am fine with that. But also, like, what a dick. Like, a mouse trap death is not great.
Even the last one.
Yes.
The last skirting board. Careful now. Careful now. Snap.
And okay, once again, referring back to that statement of, I just love, still love the tiny perfection of a good short story. I think the perfect, perfect wrap up is the wooden box singing, spread a little happiness quietly to amuse itself. And he goes to bed. Like, how much more epic can you, you know, like, end that off? That is, like, I laughed the whole way through.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it took us two episodes to cover, but it really is just a nice, brief, short story. And as I said in the last episode, that if I had read this in, like, some magazine or, you know, table side, I think it would have been enough to be like, what's next? Like, who is this author? Like, who's this Johannes Cabell? Johannes? Totally.
Johannes.
Johannes. I keep calling him Cabell because I'm afraid to pronounce his first name. But yeah. It was, like you said, short, sweet, to the point. Mm-hmm. I do enjoy it.
And it's a great standalone. Like, you don't need the other books to be able to read any of the short stories, really.
No, in an anthology of just random short stories, this would have been a great piece just in and of itself. Just...
So technically you could end here, but for the sake of the podcast, you really shouldn't. But like I was saying, like, it really does. Like, this sort of plants the seed. Like, for me, I started into the major books before I even knew there were short stories. So
same.
Being able to sort of go back and read these short stories in more of sort of chronological order, I see where the seeds were planted and how he essentially takes the growth of that character and of the development of the context and the setting into a much bigger sort of environment. This is the origin story, really, in a lot of ways, even though we never really, as far as I know, get like the true origins of, you know, like, we never hear the, you know, when I was a baby from Johannes Cabell. But at the same time, this plants enough seeds to be able, as an author, to further develop on those ideas, right? And that character.
The next short story that we're going to cover, Exeunt, Demon King.
Exeunt.
Exeunt.
Exeunt. Sure. I don't know. None of us speak Latin, so I think we're exempt from worrying. We're exempt from worrying about Exeunt.
Great. Exit Demon King, as it should be. when we get to that one, he says that that's really the short story that had him being passed from publisher to publisher and what turned it into becoming a book. Mm-hmm. And I can really see in that one just how it... I can definitely see the connection between that one and the first book. Like, you can really see the seeds in that case.
Totally.
Yeah.
And definitely, I find the next book a lot more sort of fleshed out in terms of that stuff.
Well, and it's nice because it references back, but it's not in a way that is necessary for you to actually have to have read the first
We all, or at least me and Amber, at least, did go through the series without the short stories. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't lacking, but I find that this, now having read it, is like, oh, these are actually...
Gives you more context.
I like them, yeah. Like,
it's very background.
Yeah.
Very enriching.
And also satisfying. Again, like we're going to keep saying this short story over and over, but some authors just can't write a short story. Mm-hmm. And I find that this one really is... And again, I'll read any short story an author that I enjoy puts out because I want the content of the characters, right? But I find in a lot of cases that sometimes it's not really much in the way of plot or story. It's just a little bit like, here you go. Here's some shit in between books, you know, but I find that these ones are very much like there's a just as much plot as any full book would have, but obviously not necessary when you've only got it happening in the course of an afternoon.
Exactly.
Right. All right.
Yeah.
This concludes our episode 1.2, Stormfront. Thank you for listening. You can find us online at freeflowrambling.com and necromancers.ca. There we have links to our other podcasts, social media, and other fun tidbits. Please subscribe if you like what you're hearing, and please consider supporting us through Patreon to keep the undead alive and see more content. We are Free Flow Rambling, and remember, reanimation is trending.